should do is to talk about not just Borg, but also about any arbitrary extension at the block layer. Say this is a model for block layer extensions,
mm-hmm.
right? And what we are trying to say is that, well, the extension could be even as simple as an IO scheduler extension, right? And we have IO schedulers as built-in components for operating systems, but you could potentially think about extending or just envisioning that IO scheduler component as a block layer optimization, which is what it is.
Yeah.
And you could also think about other extensions which are perform the same function like an IO scheduler.
Right, but all these extensions would basically modify the performance of the system. Performance, the only metric, right?
Right. So we want to
like
model the performance.
Not
yeah.
Else.
The goal here is to
the performance.
Is the performance. That's
okay.
True. And which is important, even if you, let's say, are doing an extension that's optimizing for power, you
yeah.
still want to know the performance impact.
Right.
So for instance, an extension like Excess,
mm-hmm.
which is optimizing for power, we still want to know what is the performance impact of that extension.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the device model for that extension would be a little bit more interesting, that it would also incur the additional, you know, device operations may incur a spin-up, for instance.
Okay.
So, and what would happen is that the arrival rates would change because some portion of the workload is being diverted elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we could still model performance of the storage system even with an extension that does fairly different things.
Right.
So I think it is for reaching a wider audience and also realizing sort of ourselves that this work is more generic, we have to write it in a slightly different way, which is what I'm trying to do right now.
Yeah.
No,
this is definitely much broader than before.
Yeah, so the other thing
and
is...
And you also have to change the way you write the Borg optimizer model section.
Yeah.
Because you want to make it more generic and say...
Exactly.
So service time for your system would be whatever parameters they have to take into account, or try and use generic parameters which...
Right, so what I was thinking about is that we have a device model,
yeah.
right, device operation model.
Yeah.
And then we have... a workload model,
mm-hmm.
and then we, what we could have is a workload transformation model,
okay.
which converts the original workload into a modified workload based on the extension itself. So that is basically a workload transformation model as defined by the extension.
Okay.
So for that model, the input is a workload and the output is a workload as well.
Yes, yeah, so it's transformed.
Yeah, there is a transformation
okay.
model in place.
Okay.
So, and now this transformation model could be arbitrary,
mm-hmm.
right? And
yes, absolutely. That depends on what service you're using.
Exactly. But it is important to sort of even making it sort of generic like that, we still have to make it concrete with those specific examples and say that how does the workload transformation model work in the case of an IO scheduler extension,
mm-hmm.
like a elevator scheduler or a NOOP scheduler? Well, in the case of NOOP, the only thing you have is merging, and with the elevator, you have something more complex.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that transformation occur? And to talk about that in very concrete terms, I think that would be important. And for Borg, of course.
Yeah.
So instead of saying Borg workload model, we should say
block layer extension model.
Block layer extension model, and talk about the examples that we have and how the model is instantiated for each of those extensions, like the IO specific NOOP elevator IO scheduler. For a vanilla, there is no transformation at all, right?
Right. Should we have a different workload transformation model, or should this be an optimizer model? So, Because in a way, the optimization would transform the workflow.
So, I guess that's just, you're saying that's just a question of terminology,
yeah.
Right? You see, what you mean by optimizer model is what I'm referring to as workflow transformation.
Because if our service is going to be, is also going to include the IO scheduler, the transformation.
Yeah, what we can say is, I just want an, you know, a descriptive term for this model itself. Or this, I mean, what we want this model to capture is that all the parameters of the workload can potentially get modified to something else.
Right. So what I'm trying to say is this should this be a part of the workload or should this be a part of the optimizer model? Because the optimization is going to modify
the original
transformation.
Workload. Yeah. So
the modification is going to be based on the optimization. And of course, for the optimization, we'll also have the performance metric, service time in some way. And in addition to that, the transformation is made.
Yeah. So the workload model is something which is very clear.
Right. That's the random reads and writes and sequential and everything.
That's the, you're trying to model the workload that's incident.
Yes.
On the optimizer
the
as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the incoming.
So, yeah, I guess if we have like description. So this would be the workload.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the optimizer, whatever. So we transform the workflow into this.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately it's going to have some service time. That's the device.
Right. So what
so this is going to be generic, but this would depend on this, right?
Yeah.
Of course, on this too, but.
Right. I mean, the reason I don't want to call it an optimizer is because it could actually make the performance worse. For instance, if we have something like excess, right?
Okay.
It can actually make parts of the performance worse.
Okay. And
increase the variance of the request time. So
let's just say service model.
What I'm calling it right now is just a block layer extension.
Okay.
Because this is, all of this fits right into what we are doing with Able. Right.
Right, yeah.
And we have all these different extensions and we want to model the transformation that each of these extensions affect on the incoming workload.
Right. Yeah.
So we can say we don't need to call it block layer extension each time. We can just call it an extension module or whatever it is that you want to call that component. And then we can say that the extension, the block layer extension, is defined by a workload transformation model,
right?
That transforms the parameters or creates a new workload given a workload that is incident on the storage system.
Right.
So we could, you know, we have to sort of write it up in a more clear way. But having a picture like this may be certainly helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so and you could potentially talk about closed loop and open loop systems as well.
Yes,
using
it would be
the
slightly
same
different
picture.
For the closed loop and open loop systems, but we could show it by different arrows.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, if you want to do a feedback, then you could
right.
do a dashed arrow and
right.
then say that the dashed
yes,
arrow is in the case of a closed loop.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, I just wanted to get some of the sort of the tone and the message of the paper, the abstraction at which we should present this.
Right.
Clarified. So what we should do is that have one section which talks about the different extension modules that we will be validating with. For instance, a vanilla extension, which doesn't do really anything, no transformation, will maybe, I don't know if we can do it that way, but there will always be a no-op scheduler at least, right? So there is going to be some transformation for the vanilla extension.
Right, but should we assume a no-op scheduler, or could be?
Or we could probably just call it a, I don't know how the validation numbers are looking like.
Well, last time we discussed, so I did the validation at a device level, and it's about 5%, ranges from 3 to 5%. But I did it for just one workload, but different portions of the SVN workload that we did last time.
Okay, no, that's actually very good. I'm actually very positively surprised by that result.
Yeah, and the thing is, for the the device, the random accesses are almost zero.
Really?
Yeah, most of the accesses are local, and some of them are sequential.
Okay, so you mean the large random
accesses? Right, the large random accesses. So the locals are about 70% or so, 70-80%.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And before you see, like, the locals are 50%.
So how do you set up the seek time for the local accesses? Because all local accesses would have the same seek time, right?
Yes.
Because you cannot use individual requests and their seek numbers.
Right, no. All of them have the same seek time, but if it's greater, then I use the other seek time formula in the seek distance.
And if it is smaller, then?
Then I use the one with the root.
No, but you do not know the distances. That's the whole point.
I know the distances based on the OPS.
You know the distances, but I guess my point is that, is there a parameter of the workload that gives you that average distance of local accesses? Because you know just a fraction of local accesses. You don't know how local they are.
Right, I just know the fraction.
So I guess my question is that how do you set up the seek time in the model for the local accesses or even the large random accesses?
So it's, or for any of the accesses for the matter, it's just the probability of that access time, the service time, the seek time for that access.
Yes, I understand that, but how do you compute the seek time?
So that's with the disk parameters.
Yeah, but one of the parameters that you need to come up with is the seek distance.
Right.
How do you...
I get it, okay. So I have used 1/3 cylinders as the seek distance.
For all accesses?
Right. That's like the cutoff.
Regardless of whether they are random. Oh, that's for local accesses.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's sort of the average seek distance.
Yes.
Isn't it? Regardless of how big the accesses are. And even if your axes are completely, in fact, if your axes are completely random, then your average would be 1/3 cylinders.
Right.
I don't know if I'm having a hard time understanding why you chose to use 1/3 cylinders for local axes as the seek distance.
Well, I just want to use the average seek distance for start with. Yeah, I think that was, yeah, this was wanted to use the average seek distance to start with at that time.
But what is the rationale behind using the average seek distance?
Well, for the average seek distance, that would be the average seek time for that. For that distance, right? So
that's not good enough either.
Yeah, but I at that time I just used 1/3 cylinders, and I thought I would change it later on, but I didn't think about it after that.
Yeah, that's a bit of a concern for me, because I think it's very important for you to understand what you are doing. If you are defining a local access as something which is restricted to a specific distance within the disk, then you have to use that distance and use one third of that distance.
Right.
Because what you're assuming is that my access, if it's a local access, can be, the starting point could be anywhere within that span,
mm-hmm.
and the ending point could be anywhere within that span, which
right.
is a shorter distance than the entire disk.
Right.
Now, what you're using is the entire disk, which means that you are talking about a large random access.
Right.
And using that value
so
for
I
a local
kind of
access.
That the requests are distributed throughout the disk uniformly somehow. I mean, it accesses all the entire disk as opposed to a file. With one third cylinders. It should be one third cylinders that are being accessed. Right?
Okay, I'm not understanding what you're saying. So, what are local accesses? How do you define a local access?
Which is less than one third cylinder for the workload.
Less than the average distance is a local access.
We haven't really defined local access yet in the paper, right? We didn't talk about this yet, but well, it should be less than the average distance.
You can define it any way you want.
Right.
Right?
Right, but it won't make sense to keep it the average. It should be less than the average.
So what is that less than the average you're saying? If there is a local access, are you talking about the maximum seek distance that can be incurred in a local access is less than one third cylinders, or
yes.
or the average?
The maximum.
The maximum. Then the average is going to be whatever you pick that distance to be, the maximum distance, divided by 3.
Right.
One third of that.
Right.
And what you're using right now is for
it,
large random accesses.
It doesn't make sense, that's a lot.
And one third of the cylinder distance, cylinder length, is can only be used if your random access can start anywhere in the disk and can end anywhere in the disk.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what you need to do is to distinguish between the local axes and the large random axes.
But there should be some metric the way we choose the maximum cylinders, right? Something to decide on what should be the maximum cylinders in a local axis.
It seems to make sense that you want to use the breaking point of the curve, right, which is, I guess, one third cylinders where the increase is linear.
Mm-hmm.
And use that as the local, you know, maximum distance for the local axis.
Okay.
Because then all the local axes can, if I want to calculate the average of that, they all follow the same function. The same linear function describes them. And I can take a simple average using just the average distance.
Okay.
It is harder for me to take an average distance for axes which are both local as well as random, because I'm going to pick one of those curves, because the average is going to be only one of those curves.
Right. Yeah.
But if I know how much is the percentage of local axes, I know that for those axes, the times are going to be dictated by this linear
mm-hmm.
portion of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I know what are the large random axes, I mean, in that case, my large random axes are defined by all axes that have a distance greater than one third
right.
of cylinders. And then in that case, the average is going to be different.
Right.
The average is not going to be one third of that, but it's going to be something more interesting, which needs to be calculated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think defining the local access as an access which incurs a maximum seat distance of one third cylinders would make a lot of sense, because then we can take the average
of that maybe one ninth of
cylinders. Yeah. And then for large random axes, we are requiring those seat distance to be greater than or equal to one third cylinders.
Yeah, curve
becomes like that, but then we need to know what is the average going to be in that case. My guess is that it would be something like this, in just extending on what is the derivation for average distance, when the distance can start from zero going to, let's say, x, then the average distance for a seek operation in this case is x by 3, right?
Okay.
Correct?
Yes.
So this is something that we know. Now, for in the case that the distance can go from x by 3 to x,
right,
then the average should be one third of this
x minus x by 3.
It has to be, yeah, exactly. It has to be x by 3 plus x minus x by 3 divided by 3, right? Because at least it's going to be this much, and plus you add, so let's say this is x by 3, this is 0, and this is x, right?
Okay.
Now all my seek distances are in this range,
mm-hmm,
from here to here. So in that case, my average should be one third of this distance,
right?
So something like this.
Mm-hmm.
What is the one third of this distance? Is x minus x by 3,
mm-hmm,
divided by 3,
mm-hmm,
which is this part,
yeah,
plus x by 3. So because the average distance I'm seeking now is this much.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think this is something that will more formally define local versus large random axes. And I mean, of course, this model can be made more rich to say that, okay, what is the distribution of local access? And if the distribution of local access is that it's not uniformly distributed in this x by 3, 0 to x by 3, then we can use a more informed average seek distance.
Okay.
And that will make the model more accurate. So we can make the model parameters richer and richer, and the model should become more and more accurate. So this is sort of I would say, very approximate model, right?
Yes.
Because we are not taking into account the distribution of those seek,
exactly,
distances. So although the workload model should not have individual seek distances, it can have a description of the
distribution
with an average and a variance, right? And if we have that average and variance information, then we can better inform the average seek distance Well, actually, just the average seek distance could be enough, because they are all following the same linear curve.
Right.
We don't even need the variance.
Right.
So average distance for average local axes,
okay,
and average distance for large random axes could make this, refine this model even more.
Okay.
Right now we are saying, well, just classify the requests as local or random or non-local, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then say, okay, for local, the worst case is going to be x/3. Or rather, I should say, average case is going to be x/3.
Mm-hmm.
x/9, and for the large random, the average case is going to be that expression over there, right?
Yes.
Which is more like five x. If we do not know anything about the average distance, we just know the percentage,
mm-hmm,
of local versus random, we could use this model. If we know the average distance for local axes, then we can use that information. So that makes the model more rich.
Yes.
But that would also require you to analyze the workload in more detail to extract. So how do you differentiate between local and random now? Given
so how local would be, or given the distribution?
No, given the workload itself, how do you calculate the percentage of local and percentage of random?
Based on the LPS, I find the centers.
And then? Once you have the cylinders, then what do you do?
Then if the number of, then between consecutive axes, if the number of cylinders is greater than whatever the max cylinder is, which was 1/3, which will now change, then it's a random axis. If it's less, then it's a local axis. If it's sequential, then...
No, you have the correct way to distinguish between local and random already. So if it's less than 1/3, you say it's a local axis.
Right now, okay, yeah.
So there's no need to change that now.
Okay.
All you need to change is the average seek distance for local and random.
Right.
In your model, or in the instantiation of your model.
Hmm.
And then you can, instead of just looking at percentage of local versus percentage of, I think we should say non-local, because
local
or small axes versus large axes. Because local is also a random axis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think better terminology is called for there. Think about that as well.
Right. Small, non-sequential. That's too long. We could think about that. Yeah, this will definitely refine the model. And we can keep what we have right now,
mm-hmm,
in case there is an approximate model, and if they need to use the refined model, they could use this.
So what we have right now? What do we have right now?
Well, right now we don't use the distribution.
You mean the average numbers?
Right, for the workload.
Yeah. But we don't use this either. This is without the average.
Right.
Okay, so this would be...
It's doing pretty well, so...
Mm-hmm. So we could say that the average distances are optional.
Right, exactly. But if you have the average distances, then you could use it.
Each time you... when I feel that we are on the same page, you say something that's...
So, the average distances are optional.
Even if the average distances don't exist, we still use this model. Right? Based on just the percentage of local versus non-local.
Right. Okay.
Or small versus large.
Yeah.
what this is telling you is what is the seek distance to use for the local axes. In case you do not know anything about the distribution of the local axes. In case you know about the distribution of the local axes, then you should not use this.
Right, then we should use the one
that... You just know the average value, just use the average value for the seek distance.
Yeah.
In the case of local and non-local, you'll have separate average values.
Right.
If you don't have the average values, then you should use this.
Yeah.
And you will see that as you make the model richer by using the average values, you will have better accuracy. I mean, that's what it should be in the ideal case.
Yes.
Here we are not taking into account the distribution of the requests.
Right.
We're just taking into account how many distribution of the local requests or distribution within the random.
Yeah.
We just know what is the percentage of local and percentage of random.
Right.
And we just assume that local axes are distributed randomly within that range and the seek distance are distributed randomly within that range for both local and non-local.
Mm-hmm.
Also, do you understand the motivation for why you want to use x by 3 to distinguish the local versus non-local?
Yes, that's where the curve becomes. That's where the curve begins.
That's where the curve changes.
Yes, okay, the graph is okay.
So when you take the averages of the average of distance of the local axes,
mm-hmm.
it's okay to do that because all the local axes lie within the same curve,
yes.
And you can do that for the large axes also,
yeah.
Because they are also within the same curve.
Right.
So there is a better justification now for splitting into local and non-local. Why you want to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes more sense. Right now, I think the most difficult and the important part is the workload transformation model.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to make it generic as possible. And
so let's talk about the workload model itself. Right.
Okay.
And then we can talk about the transformation for it. So what do you have in the workload model right now?
Right now the workload model.
Is this paper reflect the latest version of what you have?
Yes, I haven't made any changes to the drawing section that you have. So I think the workflow model right now has these attributes, the different attributes for workload.
So the probability?
No, I think that it has the attributes like spatial and temporal.
I cannot see any of that. Oh, this one here?
Oh, here.
Okay.
And what is this use? Right, so this has the workload model has these random, sequential, and local percentages.
Okay. Random, sequential, and local percentages. Okay. And how do you compute the IO time from that?
And this has to be changed. This is incorrect.
Okay, forget about what is incorrect. So let's talk about.
It's just the probability of each of these axes times the time for each of the axes.
So So just the percentage of local access times the time for local access plus the percentage of then why do we have the matrix and stuff like that? What is the need for the matrix?
Well, if we know, right, at that time I thought we needed the matrix, but with this we can find the probability of, or rather the matrix uses the transformation probabilities, that is, the probability that it goes from a large random access to sequential access, for instance. But instead of doing that, it's much simpler to just calculate the probabilities of each of these accesses in the workload.
The percentage of each access in the workload.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of finding the transformation, how they change.
Right. I think you have to work a little bit on what, because don't put more parameters than you absolutely need.
Right.
Right. I mean, things like the stride and so on, I don't think we need at this point. We are
right,
not able
no.
to use
we
any
needed
of this stuff.
But we don't need it anymore.
But, yeah, I mean, but I was sort of convinced about this state transition where...
Right, but the thing is, with this, we find the probabilities of each of it being in the state, right? These are the probabilities of being in a large random state or
mm-hmm.
sequential state or small random state. And then basically we use these probabilities to find the service time. But if we can directly get this from the workload. We don't have to use this model to get it.
Can we get it from the workload? In the workload, we only have the transitions from one request to the next request. We don't have the probability of being in a certain state. We only have the transition probabilities, right, in the workload.
But we have the percentages of requests in each of the state.
We do?
Yeah. We know how many requests are random and sequential and local.
Because for each request, we can say whether that request was a accessed, was a random access or a sequential access or I should say local or non-local.
Yeah.
So why go through all of this stuff?
Yeah, I think we can remove this.
So we don't need any of this stuff then?
Well, not this part. We could just say if you know the sequential and the random and the local probabilities then we can find.
I think this can be substantially simplified because this takes into account all the queuing and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
To calculate the service times.
Yes.
So how do you calculate the arrival rate from the workload? We just take the total number of requests and divide by total
by
time.
By the time, yeah.
That's your arrival rate. But the reality is that you don't really have a single arrival rate. A fixed arrival rate changes over time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
So and then you're validating using D2C times or
D2C.
Yeah. Okay. So which actually measures the efficiency of the system if you think about it.
Yes.
The service time really does not measure the efficiency of the system.
Yes, that is true.
I mean it does.
But actually the service time would take into account the transformation too, right? Because it has the queuing, the TQ time as well.
Take into account the transformation.
So service time meaning the time it's inserted into the queue and until it's completed, right?
Yeah.
So
right.
That depends on the queuing time. The queuing time would depend on the transformation model. Because that depends on how the requests are merged or how they are sequenced, scheduled.
No, the queuing time does not depend on the transformation model. The service time depends on the transformation model, which in turn will, or rather the, yeah, service time depends on the transformation.
Did I say queuing time? I meant service time.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you're using service time. The D2C is the service time, right?
Right. So, no, D2C is the disk mechanism time.
Okay, what is service time?
Yeah, let me draw this. So this is the queue, and then it goes to the device. This whole thing is a service time.
Oh, okay.
This is the queuing time.
Yeah.
And this is the disk mechanism time.
Okay. So, so what I meant is that the disk mechanism time will depend on the transformation.
Yes.
And then, of course, in because of that, the service time gets affected.
Yes, of course.
But the key is the transformation time itself. And in the end, if you want to measure performance impact,
mm-hmm.
you want to measure the efficiency of the disk.
Right.
And that's what we are using for validation, which is the D2C times.
Right, yeah.
So which means that we don't really need any of the queuing stuff.
That is true.
Well, actually, queuing helps in the sense that...
The thing is, there is like a loop between TD and TQ.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both of them kind of depend on each other.
Right.
At least for closed loop models. So we would need TQ as well.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, because as TD changes, the number of requests in the queue will change, which will affect the optimizer.
Right.
And that affects TD. Yeah, that's a good point. But do we capture any of that in the equations?
Not the current equation. So I'm kind of stuck at the workload transformation model right now. I'm thinking more about
it. I think first you need to work on the workload model itself. Clearly define what are the parameters that you want to use and keep it as simple as possible. And your goal is to model TD, and now of course we want to model TQ as well, and that those are the only goals you have. So don't add parameters if they do not meet these goals,
right?
Or they do not require for these goals. Once you have the workload model, then you can start thinking about transformation.
Right.
Because what the transformation would involve is each of those parameters get modified potentially. Some may be left alone, some may be unchanged.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for instance, in the case of Borg, depending on the OPD hit rate or depending on some other aspect of the workload, your percentage non-local would change.
Right.
And, you know, percentage local would increase, things of that kind.
Right, absolutely.
But first you have to define the workload model very clearly.
Yeah. I think the initial version it was more like notes instead of a proper paper version.
Put
in everything that I had.
But it's good that you're doing experiments that gives you some feedback as to what is going right and what is going wrong.
Right. Yeah, I realized this after I started the experiment that, you know, you could get these directly instead of going through the whole Markovian thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's much simpler that
way. Okay, so what's next then? What is it that you... I think what you want to do is to, you know, make the workload model and put in all the parameters and keep that to the bare minimum.
Okay.
Also, you might want to standardize your parameters. For instance, if you think about what you're capitalizing, what are the parameters that, and why one is capital versus not, the subscripts, why are they capitalized or not.
Okay.
And if you want to use letters, then you should use letters instead of having a descriptive keyword like IO size.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, I mean,
Right.
Consistency is.
Yeah, I guess once you identify all the parameters, then we can make them consistent. Right.
Or you could make them consistent from the beginning.
Okay.
It's just, I just like things to be perfect right from the beginning, so I don't have to change them later on because
okay.
it's additional time, right?
Okay.
To change them.
Well, because the thing is, like with this table, there are times when I put another parameter which I didn't use in any of the equations. Or I didn't use those equations with those parameters.
So now would be the time changing
the parameters and the tables and everything.
Yeah, now would be the time to sort of just reduce it down to the bare minimum that you need.
Right.
And also, any equation that doesn't fit in, we should not have that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think the next section would be, you know, this model section itself. I mean, so you're going to talk about the the workload model.
Yes.
And the device model.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And then in a separate section, you're going to be talking about the transformation model, or you will talk about the transformation model in the same section
okay.
as the workload and device model, and then describe instances of the transformation model in the next section, right? So,
like examples
of these transformation models and the validation of those transformation models could be either in the same section or in a different section.
I think we should first use transformation model and describe all the instances and then do the modeling. Because then the user would have a better idea, right?
And then do the validation, you mean?
No. Yes, of course, the validation will come last. But before presenting the model itself, we need to show the instances, right?
How can you show the instances? Because these are instances of the model. So without knowing the model, how can we show instances?
Okay, so what do you mean by the instances of the model?
So I talk about the workload transformation to say that each parameter
right.
could potentially get changed to that.
Right.
And in the case of Borg, elevator, no up, how do these transformations actually get done?
Okay.
For various, you know, workloads.
Yes.
Or we could have a generic description, and then in the validation part, you could really make the assign values to those transformations.
Right.
Because that would depend on the workload itself, right?
Right.
But you could talk about generic transformations when you're giving these examples. But even before you give the examples, you need to know what the workload model looks like.
Right. Yes, the workload model will have to come first.
Okay, so what you said was the example?
It was basically the same thing.
Okay. I don't know,
we're not on the same page.
I don't know what it is.
Well, I just meant organizing, like with the modeling of each of the instances would be in the workload transformation model once we have the transformation model, like you said.
Right.
But we would have to explain where we use these, or what we mean by the transformations and what services or modules would possibly transform before we use the transformation model.
But that would be maybe in the introduction or something, right?
No, I think better if we have like a different section for... Or at the beginning of the section itself, we explain what we mean by the workload transformation model.
Yeah, in the section for the workload transformation model.
And what instances
model.
We're talking about, and then present the workload transformation mm-hmm. model itself, and then the instances of the model.
Okay, yeah, sure. There has to be some motivation for why you're presenting the workload.
Right, yeah.
But the actual instantiation of those models should come later.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, that's...
At this point, at least, I'm stuck at the workload transformation model. I'm just trying to read up more on how to do that.
Well, there is no book that's going to tell you how to do a workload transformation for block layer extension. Right?
Of course not, but... still, you can get a lot of ideas from different papers.
The way I see it is that just the transformation of the parameters.
Yes, but like there are a lot of parameters, what parameters should be.
It depends on the extension
now. Like for instance, the number of requests merged and
that depends on the extension. So if you're talking about a specific extension, then you have to think about what the extension can
achieve. So this would change
for each extension.
For each extension.
And this is
so how
defined.
Broad should we make it, or how narrow should we make it? And
well,
what
the most generic workload transformation model is that each parameter can potentially get transformed.
Right.
So you have sequentiality percentage S to begin with, it becomes S prime. Now S prime can be equal to S depending on what the extension does.
Right.
Right.
We don't know what the extension does.
Well,
we just know S and S prime, right?
Well, think about how this model is going. All of this the work in this paper is going to be used, right? Given some extension, it is the developer of the extension who would create the workflow transformation model. Or even if I, the point being that I should not be required to develop the extension before getting an estimate of how this extension could potentially improve performance. That is the reason for why I want to use analytical modeling, right?
Right.
That's one of the reasons. Another reason is, well, if I change a certain parameter, how does it change the performance of the system?
Right.
So it is necessarily the developer who will create the workflow transformation model, will
right.
define the workflow transformation model.
Right.
Or the, so that's how you have to think about this.
Right.
Okay. So if you are the developer for Borg, you should know how, have an estimate of how these transformations look like for a given workload, given that you have all the workload parameters ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have some additional parameters, which are Borg parameters, right? But assuming that they are fixed, you will incur a workload transformation.
Right.
If they change, then the workload transformation could be different.
Okay. Yeah, but I was trying to think of this in a way that whatever service we use or whatever model we use, that would be like a black box. So in the workflow transformation model would have no information of that.
Of what the extension is?
Of what the extension is. It would just have how it transforms, information about how it transforms the model. So the
But that information has to come from outside, right?
Right. So the model specific parameters would be in the module specific parameters would be in the modules.
So you can think of this as a function. Right, it's a black box function that takes a set of input parameters, which are the workload parameters, and produces a set of output parameters, which are again workload parameters, but that of the modified workload.
Right, but we don't know how the transformation takes place.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. The user of the model will define that, and each time you pick an extension, you need to define that function before you can use any of this stuff, right?
So, for instance, the user would define how the requests are merged. Or rather, how...
The user will just rewrite this function. Given a set of input parameters, give me the output parameters. Now, so that's why I'm saying it is very important for you to define clearly what the workload parameters are.
Mm-hmm.
Because each of those parameters are what need to be transformed by the transformation model. So without defining these parameters, you cannot write the transformation model.
Okay.
Because the output of the transformation model is just another workload, which just requires you to define the various parameters of that modified workload.
Okay.
The same set of parameters that existed in the original workload.
Right.
But if you don't know what those parameters are for sure, you cannot do the transformation.
Right, okay. I made changes to the modeling section to begin with, so things are not clear.
Yeah, okay.
And then once we have the necessary or the required workload parameters, then we can do the transformation model.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to start with simpler models, like for instance, the elevator or the NOAP, where there is just merging. That would allow you to identify the workload parameters quickly. And once you start, you know, I think in this case, instantiating while you're developing the model will actually help refine the parameters And then when you move on to Borg, maybe there will be new parameters that get added.
Right.
But yeah, start with the simpler ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, yeah, so I mean, we can probably meet tomorrow evening or something like that, maybe 4:30 or so.
Yeah, that'll give some time.
That will give us both some time to do some progress.
Yeah.
Okay, and whenever you have the model section, I can take a look at it.
Yeah, I'll do that first and then.
Okay.
All right, so tomorrow at 4:30 for sure?
Tomorrow 4:30, yeah, works. Yeah, okay. Let me add that in. All right. Thanks, Mira.